Hi, welcome to the Sophia Talk Show. This is a podcast all about books, movies, anything fantasy related or fiction books related. I am Sophia Simpson. I will be your host, and I will be bringing on lots of guests, including authors and readers and non-readers alike. And every once in a while, I'll bring in a serious topic or two. And I hope you enjoy this show as much as I've enjoyed recording it. Oh, and by the way, I'm a young adult Christian fantasy author, which explains the book talk. And on that note, I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome, 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 Candace Yamnitz. So happy to have you on the Sophia Talks podcast. I have been a huge fan of your lovely book. It is so cute. And I was able to, I know I started it like last year, I want to say. When did you publish this book?
I published it in 2022, or actually my publisher published it in 2022.
I want to say I saw this right when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I love the cover. I love, you know, I'm half Mexican myself. You can't tell because I'm so fair. But my mom could barely speak English. So I loved your Latin vibes that you had in here, all of the mangoes and the Spanish food, and it was very well done, very well done. So tell me what your nationality is.
So I am half Mexican, half Puerto Rican.
Ooh, combination of two different Latin cultures. That's so great. Anyway, I just, I gravitate towards books with the Spanish feel, and yours definitely had that and more. So I sent you a few questions, and I guess we can start with those since those are the ones I prepared you about, but I do have other ones if that's okay. Anyway, tell me how long you've been writing.
So I've been writing for about 6 years professionally. Before then, it was just journal writing and poetry writing, but around 2017, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm finally going to write that novel I have in my head. And I was incredibly
nervous. Okay, so journal writing and poetry too. Okay. So is Unbetrothed your only book, or do you have others?
So I have one novel, which is Unbetrothed, but I also write chapter books for my children. And this is the other one. There's also a Spanish vibe in it. This one really, honestly, probably looks most like my household because my husband is American. But he is a mixture of all sorts of things. But I decided to write a little bit about that, sprinkle in some Spanish, have kids go through a fantasy world, and I put my children in it.
And how many, is there just the one of that? Or is there a series?
There's one of that one, and that one released this year. So I plan on releasing another one. I was hoping to have it out before Christmas, but honestly, I feel like I am inundated with projects. So it comes out when it comes out.
Okay.
And that one's indie compared to Unbetrothed is with a traditional publisher with Iron Stream Media. So I know one of your questions was whether or not I have other books, and I do. I've actually written about 9 books. 4 of them right now are on submission with publishers. So this is more like a waiting game. Like, will publishers accept it? Will they not? Can I indie publish them with anything in the Unbetrothed world? I cannot indie publish it without them rejecting me first. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know what I want. I don't know if I want them to accept me or reject me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've never been traditionally published, but I would imagine the support that you can get from a publisher would be nice. That would be really
nice. It is. I mean, like doing both routes, I will say that traditionally publishing has its perks. Like people, I mean, this sounds bad, but there people have this idea about traditional publishing. So right away you say you're traditionally published. And then my traditional publisher, they sent it in to different magazines. And some people, like my friends on Facebook, people I know paid no attention when I said a book was releasing, paid no attention to my book releasing until they saw some other person rave about my book on a magazine, a real magazine. So I will say there is some like there's some mental thing with that. And then I got a Kirkus review, which with indie is very different than with traditional, because with indie, you pay for a Kirkus review and you don't know if they're going to say yes or no or like it or whatnot, but you always get the review. Compared to a traditional, they send in your book. Every traditional publisher sends in their book and you don't know if you're going to get a review. In fact, most people don't get a review. I ended up getting a review, the first person in my publishing house to get one. And it was, yeah, it was really cool and really nice. And it's helped me get into a lot of libraries because there's, they like their editorial reviews. And when I explained to librarians before, like, hey, you know, with indie, it costs a lot of money to get an editorial review. They're like, oh, it does?
Yeah, like $450. I checked
yes,
into
does.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's I'm expensive.
Like, we don't have that budget.
I know. And is this audiobook too?
It is. It got picked up by Tantor Media. So Tantor Media is also a publishing house, but for audiobooks. And I was really excited. I didn't think it was going to get picked up because a few months had passed. Nothing got picked up. I asked my publisher, hey, is it possible for me to read my own book? I know how to do it. I know how to edit audios. I know what it takes to create an audio studio in your house. Granted, I don't have a great space for it, but I know how to do it. And because I did a podcast before. And it ended up when I sent in the information, like the question, they came back a month later and they're like, actually, it got picked up by Tantor Media. So yeah, it's going to release in a year. It's kind of cool. And I was really excited because
That's amazing. Congratulations. Congrats. Mm-hmm. I know another author that uses Tantor Media picked up hers too. She's a sweet romance author. I've actually had her on my show. So if you ever want to look at, watch that show, it's Judy Corey. Have you heard of her?
No, I haven't.
She's oh my gosh. She probably has about 18, 19 sweet romance books out. I actually really got lucky and I get to beta read for her, which is like so
it's awesome.
Super fun.
Yes.
I know. I don't even know how that happened. But yeah, so have you always wanted to be a writer? Is that something that's always been a dream of yours?
No, it wasn't. Honestly, growing up, I don't know about you, but like my mom, she comes from a very like poor family. Like they didn't read. It wasn't like a thing that they did. They didn't own books. I don't think my family owns a ton of books. When I go to their houses, there's not really bookshelves. Okay. So, I mean, reading was a thing I saw on TV that, oh yeah, on TV, the American kids get read to at night. We don't get read to at night. So, I didn't get into reading until I was in high school when I became a Christian. So I started reading the Bible and I didn't, because I was like, oh, okay, this is fun. This is what Christians do. And I wanted to get to know, like, what do I believe? So I start reading. And then afterwards, I finished, like, the New Testament. And I'm just like, okay, what else do Christians do? So I'm like, I'll read. Yeah, they read Lord of the Rings. Okay, so I'll read Lord of the Rings. And I fell in love with reading. Before then, I did not read my high school books. I'm sorry, teachers, if you guys are listening. I did not read those books. Cliff Notes. So, yes, I started reading. I read Pride and Prejudice and I fell in love with reading. I also read, like Water for Chocolate, loved it. Some parts of it, I was like, maybe that shouldn't have been there. It looked a little risque, but, it was still super fun to see, like, my culture right there on display. I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely it.
That was actually, I read that in high school. That was a high school book for me. Yeah.
Oh, that was a high school book for me too.
It was a high school. Yeah. And I was like, I'm reading this, like,
yes.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a little risque. Definitely a little risque. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that it definitely has the Latin culture represented well in that book. Completely.
Yes.
For sure.
So I wanted to put all those things together. And honestly, I got back into reading with Twilight. So my cousin recommended it and I was like, well, you know, I'll just try this out. And I'm sitting there. I was a teacher, a first grade teacher. And I remember someone at some meeting was just like, you know, it's okay if you sit and you actually read during that independent reading time, because we had this stop and read time for everyone. And I was like, okay, kids, it is stop and read time right now. Pop out my Twilight book.
I was a huge Twilight fan. In fact, I threw a Twilight party for my sister-in-law's 40th birthday. And we went into, it's actually a Spanish restaurant, and they had a private room, and I put twinkle lights all around, and we baked a cake that had the cover of, you know, the apple and everything.
Yes.
I had goodie bags. I had shirts that I had, and I was a photographer at the time. So I took a picture of a feather, and then I designed a t-shirt that said Isle Esme with the feather right there. And I ironed them all over there. Oh my gosh. We had the best time. Twilight. And in fact, in Terror, I give it kudos, because I feel like with Twilight and J.K. Rowling, they opened up a whole new part of the bookstore for us, young adult books. If it, I'm not sure if it wasn't for them, if it that ever would have happened, honestly.
It's true. Honestly, before then, YA really didn't exist. It's a newer genre. And it's funny because I think people forget that sometimes. It's like, this is a new genre. Those were cutting edge books. All those they're classics now. It's like the Hunger Games and all that. Like, they had to be put in MG before. Now it's like they have their own section. They're completely different than adult, and they have their own tone, their own rules. It's kind of funny how that goes. And that made me fall in love with reading all over again, and audiobooks, because I became a mom in that time. So.
Yeah. So do you consider this Christian fantasy? Is this considered Christian fantasy, or is it considered just young adult fantasy?
It's considered just young adult fantasy because it's put on the bookshelves with all the other young adults, which is honestly, that's like the trend right now with Christian YA. With Christian YA, a lot of Christian publishers are just going to be, want to be on the YA shelf rather than the Christian shelf, because there's a huge difference in the amount of real estate that it takes up. And also the audience you want to reach is really in the YA section for the most part. Christians are willing to go to the YA sections. Most of them are not willing to go to the Christian section. So that's usually how it gets labeled. Now, what I will say is that, I mean, you read it. There's definitely a heavy element of faith in it. And in YA, for high fantasy, that's kind of a thing you can put in there. I've noticed that in a lot of YA. For instance, if you're reading The Kiss of Deception, huge book. I love Mary Pearson's books. She does, even though I don't know where she stands with her faith, but there definitely is a huge faith element inside of there. And in a lot of them, there's different gods and goddesses and whatnot. So you can do what you like. Of course, in my world, it's monotheist. It's the ancient one. And the rules are obviously, like, they follow more Christian for me. So, and I wanted to put that in there. I don't think a book is actually well-rounded without the spiritual aspect of someone's life.
Right. I'm sure that sells a lot more books, because I feel like with my Christian fantasy, I've actually hit some roadblocks. So Christians will say, you can't have magic in your book. That's not biblical. And I'm like, wow, you know, like, God is the God. Go read Narnia. But God is the God of imagination. I mean, don't you think that he would want us to expand on that? Like, just create these beautiful worlds where we can celebrate God too in these worlds. So I feel like it's growing. I'm hoping that it's a growing genre, because mine is definitely categorized as Christian fantasy, but We'll see what ends up happening in the future, and which bookstagrammers will fall in love with your book and give, you know, big kudos to it. And you just never know what's going to end up growing. You just never know, you know, so you know. But I love writing Christian elements into my book. I love talking about my faith. I love sharing about it. I love fleshing that out. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that, how do you deal with real life issues with your faith? You know, so anyway, that's kind of my take on the Christian fantasy element.
But, honestly, I have a dystopian that's Christian. And my biggest issue with getting it published isn't the Hispanic element. So I wrote about, because I wanted, with that book, that was actually my first book, the one that's on submission, that I ever wrote, started writing, decided to wrestle with. And I wanted to write something that looked like me and my friends when we were like in high school and college. And my friend, my best friend in college was Korean. So I was like, okay, we're going to do Hispanic character, Korean character. I want one non-Christian, one Christian. The main character was non-Christian Latina. But then I'm like, I need the Christian element. So I ended up making the second one. So I did need a reader. What's it called? A sensitivity reader for that one as well. And I wanted the Christian element because I wanted Christians in fiction. Like I look at YA and all the books out there, there's no Christians. And if they're Christian, they're bad. And it's like, okay, well, that isn't realistic. And that's actually an atrocity right there. So that we're pouring that into people's heads. So I wrote that one, and that one actually has been rejected multiple times for being too Christian. Even though like the point of the book isn't necessarily to convert anyone. It isn't. Honestly, the point of the book is just to have a Christian in there. This is a real Christian, how she looks. She's not perfect. She wrestles with things, and they can be friends. Right. Even though they both don't share the exact same worldview. So it's very interesting.
Well, have you ever been to a Christian conference, a Christian writers conference by any chance?
Actually, I tend to go to the Right to Publish, which is the only Christian writing conference in the Chicago area, because I'm from the Chicago area. And this year I got to actually take pitches. What is it? I did one-on-ones, which was so much fun. So I was, what is that called?
Faculty?
Were you
on faculty?
Yeah, I was on faculty. So that was a lot of fun to see that and to be able to help people on that level.
That's really neat. Well, I ask that because I've been to several Christian writing conferences, and one of them, agents and editors told me there's not a market for Christian fantasy. There's not a market for it. And agents won't even touch you. Nope. Like they won't go anywhere near you unless you have a book that can translate to both markets, non-Christian and Christian. And I get that. I get that. But I'm still hoping, you know, that, and in fact, there's only three big publishing houses that actually will publish Christian fantasy. So you have, let's see, Tyndall, Enclave, and who's the other one? I've pitched to Tyndall and Enclave, but I didn't publish. Oh, I can't think of it off the top of my head. But anyway, there is a third one. Huh?
Thomas Nelson?
I think that's it. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they know who I am.
Oh, really? You've pitched to them?
Subbing things. Well, part of it, okay, so I will say, part of it is that Tyndale is in our area. So they're in our backyard. We invite them to come to our ACFW meeting. And so we can imagine we're all sitting there pitching to them like a million times. They're like, you can email us anytime. I'm like, oh, are you sure you want to open that door? Let me submit like my 20 projects. So yes, I'm pretty sure. So it's just very interesting just how it goes. And I don't know, it makes me sad. And I think there is a market for Christian fantasy. I know there's a market for it. It's not huge. And I think that the problem is that these companies to run, they really do need those huge numbers and margins because it's expensive, especially if you want to do it. Yes, it does. There's a huge cost to it, which is why I'm like, okay, if this manuscript doesn't get accepted by what's it called, any publishing house, I think I want to indie publish it because it's just, I think there's a market for it and I think people would love it. And this one isn't quite as magical. And I actually do have something to say about the magic element in it because I have been tabbed for this, like, okay, you know, there's magic in your book and everything. And it's like, well, first of all, that this isn't our world. What makes magic evil? Like, why is that a problem? Magic is getting power from another source besides God. But what if God decided instead of these rules that this is what you guys can do, which if you think about it, we do have giftings. It's just now I'm going to exaggerate them and they're more magical for us, but in their world, they're normal. Right. And it's like, it's just a different set of rules. And it's easier to communicate your message in an exaggerated format when you're doing fantasy.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's actually a question that I had on here that I did not send you. So how did you come up with the giftings in your book?
So
I love how they're also different.
Yes. So I was thinking about it and I'm just like, okay, I want to do something that's parallel to our world, but I also want something different. And at that time, it wasn't out as much that, you know, it was one person who didn't have a gifting, it was usually that you were the person with the biggest gifting and that was the person mm-hmm. without. Obviously now other people have done books like that as well. But at that time it wasn't as popular. So I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have a book where she's not gifted and her wrestling through that. And I already had an idea of a character who already felt who they weren't good enough and they were inadequate. So I wanted to wrestle through that. And honestly, that's the season I had gone through. And that's probably the season I was going through then, you know, it was postpartum. So I was wrestling through things. I was also helping teens at church. And I saw my character in front of me. I'm like, I have to write it. I'm like, I see this person all the time and people don't tend to write about them in books because they're not mm-hmm. as likable. They're a really difficult character to write because people tend to be like, oh, not fun, not a good person. So,
one thing that really struck me with your main character is that she had some major faults. She was selfish, she was self-absorbed, and she got knocked for it. And I don't want to give any spoilers or anything to anyone who hasn't read the book, but like she gets taken to task. And I'm like, I remember when I was reading, I was like, this is different. Usually, you know, the main character is celebrated and they're just oohed and awed over. And they usually have these wonderful qualities, you know, selfless mm-hmm. and heroic and all these things, which I still love those kind of characters yep. too. But by the time you introduced that in this book, you already did love the character and you're rooting for her to like get over these, you know, self-absorbed tendencies. So.
Yeah. And that's like the thing I wanted because I'm like, let me be real with you. Okay. Like, I don't like admitting it, but that used to be me. Like when I was yeah. in high school, I was not all, it was things needed to be formed and shaped and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. people, when they feel inadequate, I mean, they can respond by trying to people please and being the person that people want to be with, but they could also go the opposite direction. A lot of people do go the opposite direction and those people aren't talked about. So I was like, I'm going to write a book about it. And it is a risk, but I want to take it because honestly, I wrestled with this. It's funny when my dad read the book, he was just like, I didn't know what he was going to say. I didn't know he was mm-hmm. going to read the book ever. I didn't think he was going to read the book ever, but it came out in audiobook. So he's like, yeah, I'll audiobook it. And he comes up to me afterwards and he's like, Candace, did you know you wrote a book about yourself? I was like, damn. She's a likable character. And I was like, I mean, it's true. I mean, sometimes you write about what you used to wrestle with.
Yeah.
No, like what you wish you could have told yourself.
Yeah. Like, we're not perfect people. We're not perfect. We make mistakes, you know, and I feel like that created a really good tension, really good conflict in your story. So I actually really, I really appreciated what you did with her. So let's see. So I guess the next question, are there more books coming? You're hoping so. And if you can't, have you tried to pitch to Enclave by any chance?
Yes. So I have actually this summer, I went to Write to Publish and I got to talk to Steve Lobby. It was really fun because he ended up sitting right in front of us randomly and we're just talking about random stuff. We're like, oh, he's right there. And like, all of us were fantasy writers. So you can imagine all how perked up we were, like, yes. But he wasn't taking necessarily pitches. Like you couldn't sign up for him in a pitch. So I went and asked, I asked him, can I pitch to you? And he's like, yes, you can. If you see I'm back here and I'm not doing anything, feel free. So of course, one thing about Write to Publish that's fun is that it's in an old gym, which means the floors are nice and creaky. And of course, I'm like 5 feet tall. So I'm wearing heels, click, 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 walking across the empty floor. He like looks, I mean, you can hear me a mile away and he's like just taking out the chair. All that to say, I did get to pitch to him and the prequel, he looked at like my list of things. He's like, no, pitch to me now. I'm like, ah, good. Like with verbalizing and not just showing me your one sheet. It's like, okay, let me see if I have this memorized. I went back the night before and I like redid my pitches. So of course I didn't have it memorized.
Oh no.
So I'm like sitting here, like just making things up as I go, who knows what came out of my mouth. And he's like, actually, I have a feeling he already knew who I was because he looks at it. He's like, I'm not really taking these contemporary fantasy type ones. We don't really do that as much in Enclave and we just, whatever not. So he tells me that because I had pitched him two contemporary fantasies already. Just over internet. So he goes in the next one, and the next one is the one I completely changed, which is the prequel to Unbetrothed. And he's like, I like this one. He explained to me why he liked it. He's like, yeah, I want to see that one. And so I'm like, okay, so this entire summer I spent, I'm like, I'm just going to finish it, and just needed editing. It didn't need, it was done already, but major editing. So I did the major edits, finished it on time. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to send it in. But wait a second, I'm traditionally published. I have a contract, which means that my publisher always gets first rights to any book in the Unbetrothed world.
Okay.
So I had to go to my publisher and submit it. And right now my publisher is looking at it. So we will see. Okay. And I submitted the sequel to Unbetrothed, the prequel to Unbetrothed. They can be a completely separate series because it's a different character. And if people had listened to my podcast, because some people did, there were definitely a good amount of people who listened to my podcast. They really liked that character. If they didn't like Beatrice, they liked this one, Minerva. So she's a completely different person. And yes. And then I also pitching my novella that is a prequel to Unbetrothed. It's the mom's story. So I do have a lot of books.
Read her story. Yes. She sounds amazing. I'm trying to remember who Minerva is. Do we know who Minerva is in Unbetrothed?
Nope.
No.
That's why I could do it separately, because Minerva is the girl who hands her the pocket watch. So she is an unnamed character, a random person. And my imagination, this was supposed to actually be a freebie, a novella freebie. And somehow Minerva's story turned into an entire novel.
Okay.
So I was just like, okay, yeah, it's like, you know, 60,000 words. I don't think it's a novella anymore.
Yeah, right.
And she has the ability to teleport. So it's fun.
Oh, that sounds fun. I love it.
She can't talk. She's mute.
She can't talk. She's mute. Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It was a very difficult write. I'm sitting there writing. I'm like, wait a second. Dialogue. What is it?
Oh, right.
Yes.
Right.
How many times can a girl nod?
My gosh, you're doing Ariel and the Little Mermaid all over again.
Yes, it is Ariel and the Little Mermaid, except she's different than Ariel. She's not quite as curious. She's more skittery.
More scary?
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, like skittery. She's skittish. She doesn't trust people. And what did my friend called her? She had a word for her. I can't remember, where she like clamps up. Like she has like a huge boundary around her. She doesn't want anyone near and she doesn't trust anyone. So she's a kind of a lonely character. She doesn't have as many friends. So that was also another challenge. But okay. I loved her. I loved her story. And Cosme, which is Beatrice's brother, is the other guy in it.
I like Cosme. He was
good.
I love the knife scene that he does when...
Yes, at the end.
Yeah, at the end. So, okay. Is there a book you're dying to write?
Yes. So I saw that question. I'm like, yes, how do I explain this? So I have a book, and this is the other one I pitched on Clip, and I'm so excited to write it. I've been dying to just sit down, plow it out. It's a long book, and I have some of it done. It was started off as a choose your own adventure, but choose your own adventures are a copyrighted term, not just copyrighted term, but a copyrighted idea. Like no publisher is picking up your choose your own adventure. Okay. Because they can get sued. I did not know this until, like, you know, I've already done like 20,000 or more words in this book. And one of my friends told me then when I talked to Steve Lobby about it, because I had to double check, he was like, no, absolutely not. And finally, when I sat down with him, he looks at it. He's like, okay, this is the only one that doesn't say Latin inspired anything. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of gospel inspired. And I kind of wanted to show what happens when people choose the light and don't choose the light. And I wanted to show both outcomes completely. He's like, okay. So he's like coming up with ideas. And I'm like, I have to write this book. I've been dying to do it. The first book is, it has like a scene where you have to choose and you see what both outcomes, how they turn out. And the second book that I have in my mind for this is a parallel story. Yeah. So it's a parallel story. So you see half of what would have happened if she chose this side, the other half, what would have happened if she chose the other side, and they have the same timeline. So It's so much fun. I'm like sitting there. I've plotted it out, which I am not a plotter. I'm becoming a plotter, but I'm not really a plotter. So I'm like, with this one, I want to dive deep. And my mom's been asking about this story for the last like 4 years. So I'm like, I really just have to write it. It's a little bit intense, the first scene. It has a huge opening image.
Yeah, I have a book like that too. I have a book like that too. I'm waiting for my subscribers to get more to gain more subscribers. I'm waiting to gain more followers on social media so that I can actually pitch a story. In fact, Linda Howard with Tyndall, I see her at this conference in California every year. And I was like, when I get ready, I'm pitching this idea to you. And she's like, okay, sounds good. So I have a story like that too. The opening scene in this book is she is literally on her deathbed. She's on her deathbed. Yeah. And she like Jesus comes and gets her. She comes. And so it's like, it's a pretty strong emotional scene. So.
Yes. I know the first one, mine isn't quite her on her deathbed, it's her murdering someone. But it like
Ooh.
changes everything. So
Okay.
it's like a little intense, and it's the world is very different. It is like it's a gray, there's color. It's just that you can't see it because everything's dark. It's like a planet where half is in light and half is in dark, and there's this like battle going on between the two areas. So it's so much. I just love it. So I'm going to get to it. I was like, I'm going to start it in September, but I'm like, wait. I have the second book for the Jesse and Kai books. I also have another one called Familia Secret that I really want to pitch to Thomas Nelson. And that one is about a family where it goes in the family line, their special gifting, and their gifting is they collect memories and they can give memories. So, and they get used for, there's a crime in the family that no one knows about until this when the girl unearths the memory and her aunt's like store of memories. So she's like, okay, so now it's like a murder mystery slash like cultural shock and going on both sides. And it's a lot of fun. She ends up freezing a group of guys who are serenading her, and they put them in the closet because they don't know what to do with the frozen guys.
I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm going to switch us around a little bit. So I read your acknowledgments and you said that your story, Unbetrothed, ended up in the Genesis contest. Okay. Is that with a conference? What is the Genesis contest?
So the Genesis contest is a nationwide contest through ACFW, and it's for unpublished authors. It's the first, I think, three chapters, something like that, maybe 10 pages of your manuscript, and you're competing against people in the ACFW. ACFW is huge. So have you heard of them? Like,
I have. They just had a conference, didn't they? In St. Louis.
yes. And I
Okay.
think they're going to be in New Orleans next year. So I'm part of the American Christian Fiction Writers. I was the chapter president last year of Chicago. So I get to be in Steve Lobby's book. It's kind of fun. But I'm not this year because I'm just busy, let's be real. And it was a boost. I would say Unbetrothed, honestly, was in my files, never to come out. It was already in the grave. Like I was done with it already. And when I decided, okay, one last time, I'm going to put it in the Genesis contest to see what happens. It became a semifinalist. And the nice part about ACFW contests is you get feedback every time. Now, I've heard some people who didn't get great feedback. It really depends on your judges, but every time I've done it, I've gotten feedback and it's been productive. That one, I ended up getting like six different feedbacks. I didn't go on, but it resuscitated the manuscript. I knew what I needed to fix. And I ended up, when I pitched that year and right to publish, I didn't pitch on Betrothed. I pitched a whole bunch of other ones. They said, hey, when you're more complete with them, we'd like to see it again. And then I did a Twitter pitch contest because back in the day, they were a little more popular. I submitted to my agent. My agent loved it, picked it up within a month. And I ended up with an agent. I submitted Unbetrothed to secular publishers, Christian publishers. It ended up getting a lot of full manuscript requests, which was really nice, from like Scholastic and from Harlequin and from other big publishers. So that was super cool and super encouraging, because if you've ever been in the pits of any sort, any submission pits query, or you already have an agent and you're in submission pits, it's probably the one of the most discouraging things you'll ever do, because you get rejections, lots of them. And you really don't want the cold rejections, which is the regular, like, thank you for submitting, it just wasn't a right fit. You want the rejections that give you specifics. But when you get the specific rejections, they tell you specifically what's wrong with it, why they don't like it. They don't connect with your character. You thought it was insane, whatever. Sometimes it's mean, sometimes it's great. They're not known for being friendly. So with that one, that happened. But I honestly think it was a God thing, because I didn't realize one of my Instagram friends was one of the acquisition people at Ironstream Media. And she's like, hey, Candace, I have your entire manuscript, and I was looking through it and I wrote notes all over it. Do you want my notes? It's like, yes, I'll take them. So
how did she get your manuscript? How did she get that?
She's an acquisition editor. She's part of the acquisition team.
So you had submitted to Ironstream then?
I had submitted to Ironstream.
Oh, okay.
So she had it and she's like, Candace, I really loved it. Here's the things I think you should fix. So I went, looked through it, and I took her notes and I went and I edited it again. They gave me a revise and resubmit. And the revise and resubmit, they gave me a little letter of what I should fix, but nothing specific. Hers were very specific. I was like, I could definitely fix those things. I mean, that's not a big deal. So I went back, revised the book again, chopped off chapters, put in chapters, and then I got accepted for my my manuscript got accepted. I got a contract. And of course, you go through the whole editing thing again, and you chop chapters and add chapters again. There's some chapters that weren't there even up to that point. And it's kind of funny, because some of those chapters were probably the most nerve-wracking things to put in there, because no one else looked at them besides me and my editor before it got published. It was that fresh. I'm like, okay. So I'm like, it gave me a little bit, also a boost of encouragement. Like, okay, I'm not where I used to be in my writing. Like, I don't have to worry that they're going to like sit there and like completely reconstruct all my writing again. Like, my writing has actually gotten better. So,
right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, remember, I wasn't a reader for a long time. I didn't have, you know, like there's people who are like, yes, I grew up reading and I read everything. I started writing at 13. Yeah, that was not me. So it's like, I felt like I was behind my parents' grammar. Like, grammar is not my thing. My parents had terrible grammar. I mean, they love reading. They speak English perfectly fine. It's just, you know, like there's certain things I didn't realize they were saying wrong all my life, because you say them in Spanish that way. So of course, obviously in my head, you say them in English that way. My husband's like, no. No, you don't.
Oh.
I've been saying it wrong my whole life.
<He's> like... Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. Grammar is not my strong suit either. And I'm looking at different audiobook narrators for Tara. I'm considering putting it in audiobook. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have said the word terror and fire like 10 times in 3 sentences. What was I thinking? Like, next time I have to read this book out loud in order for me, or, you know, you can have your computer read it back to you. And I was like, I need to take the time to do that, because.
So one of my tips for editing, I did this thing called the novel mentor, because every time I go to one of these book signings, there's always one or two or three or four or five people who come up to me and ask me how to write a novel and about things like that. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I don't think I could even explain it to you all in 1 hour, not nonetheless like standing here in 10 minutes, which people have sat with me for 1 hour.
Wow.
So I ended up doing this thing where I'm like, okay, these are the basics. If you're completely brand new, here's something to help guide you. And one of the tips I put in there that someone finally gave me was, here's a list of words. You need to go back and find the words that you just love to say over and over again, whether it's hand, head, nod, smile, go back, do a word search on it, count how many times you say it, and drop it down to like 2, if possible, and every chapter. I've done that. Like, even feel. I have gone through my book, looked up every feel in my book. So every feel that you or felt that you see in my book, I purposely left it there.
Okay.
But that was because I did a word searches like that. So I had gotten a word search list from my agent, and I went back and I literally looked up all the most common words that people over say.
Okay.
It's definitely a thing.
That's really, really helpful. That is really helpful. Yeah, because like I said, I was horrified when I got my editions. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to redo a lot of that entire scene because it was way too overdone. Another thing you said in your acknowledgments, your husband is not a fiction reader. Mine is not either, but he will read a chapter or two. Does yours do that? Will he read a chapter or two of your book? No.
I don't ask him to either. And what I'll do usually with my husband is I'll ask him, does this scenario seem plausible? And I'll tell him the whole scenario. And he's more of a matter of fact person. He's like, why would anyone do that? Why didn't they just do this? I'm like, note taken. Okay, I'm sitting here. He honestly has kept me from quitting so many times. Even though he does not understand this fiction thing, he is like, you are not quitting. If God called you to do this, you are continuing going. You are not going to quit for bad reasons. You're not going to quit because of discouragement. You're going to quit because God told you to stop.
Right.
That's it. Like, it's not. So it's been really great. He's been so supportive of it. I mean, we joke around about my writing. He's like, every time I get a chance, because we share the same desk. Okay. So that means when he's working, I cannot go and write at my desk. So if he gets up and he takes a little break, I'm like,
Wow, really?
getting my 10 minutes in.
Oh my gosh, how do you write books like that? That's insane. Does he work from home?
Yes, ever since 2020, he works from home. So it's definitely been a musical chairs sort of thing.
Oh man, that's hard.
Yes, it is.
That's hard. Oh my gosh. Going back to Unbetrothed, just because, I have to ask. You leave your book in a cliffhanger, and I want to know, how do your readers feel about that? Because I can tell you how I feel about it.
A lot of people have messaged me at the end of the book, and you're like, there's going to be another one, right? And I was like, okay, so I honestly never intended to be a cliffhanger. It was going to be happily ever after. But as I'm writing the plot arc, I'm like, no, that makes no sense. That makes no sense. That makes no sense. I'm like, I'm sorry, but he's not going back, and everything's hunky dory. So, yeah, so it was, it happened after the end of the first draft. It happened, and I was just like, you know what? I felt like it made more sense. The arc, the actual character arc, is complete. So I don't feel like I left that untangled. Like, yes, she changed. She knows she needs that there's something wrong. She's definitely like, okay, I need to go to the ancient one. I'm really sorry about this. And that is the main part of the book. Now, the romance part of the book, I was like, okay, I could leave that a little undone because he has to go back home. When he goes back home, things are not good. And oh, I can't wait to share with you the sequel because it is a lot of fun. And there's also, it's a dual perspective, which was different. Yeah.
Oh, that
So
is
loved it.
different.
Yes, Laude, she had her own perspective. And that was not intentional. Like in my head, it was going to be a single perspective. We're just going to get this out with Beatrice. And I realized, I'm like, no, it can't happen. You know, I think Laude knows all the secrets and Beatrice knows none of them. So I have to have it with both to see both sides of it. And it was so much fun. And Laude's voice is very different, which is fun. And she also has her own fun backstory. Well, her mom has a
Oh,
backstory.
so this isn't, you don't have a dual perspective with your main character. And what's the guy's name? Enrique?
No. Zikri.
Oh, yeah. How did I get that wrong? How do you say it?
Zikri. Zikri.
Zikri. Zikri. Okay. So it's not Zikri's perspective, it's
No.
Laude's. Oh,
I know I have a bad tendency of doing girl perspectives more. I have not gotten into writing guy perspectives. I don't know why. I think part of it is because my heart is always like my heart's in women's ministry, my heart's in teen girl ministry. And I feel like there's so much to unravel in that, their friendship and what happens if they do end up with the guys that they like. I mean, do they stay together? I mean, they wanted to be, she, Lau, they wanted to be best friends forever with Beatrice. Now she's finally best friends, but she also has a beau. Yes. And Zikri is, well, he can't come back unless he has a treaty. So it's a lot of fun. I played with that.
That's fun. That is fun. Yeah, I can. And that makes sense. It does completely make sense. But I'm a happily ever after kind of girl. And you do kind of give that. I'm not trying to give it away or anything, but like you do kind of give that. You give us a little bit of that. So we're not like completely left wanting. But okay.
I just
Can you
didn't
tell me what
want
the
to be.
hardest? What was the hardest thing about writing Unbetrothed, would you say? Or even
Editing
the prequel or the sequel? The
Okay, I'll
editing?
tell you, they're all three different beasts. Unbetrothed, I wrote it. Okay, so I wrote it in one January. I wrote part of it. I came back to it in a July and I just pounded it out. I stayed up till like 2 a.m. I was having so much fun. I'm like, yes, this is great. Finished it. I thought, okay, I'll go and do back one edit and submit it. Yeah, so I did not know what I didn't know then. So I had to go back and edit it so many times, which was great. I think it made the book so much better. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot through it. I love the world. So that was the hardest part for Unbetrothed, all the editing I needed to do to get rid of all that bad stuff. Like, yeah. And when you write fast, that's what happens usually. And I didn't plan it out. Okay, this was all discovery writing. So then afterwards, for the sequel, it was not like that. I think the hardest part for the sequel was that there's now a mental game. I didn't start writing the sequel until Unbetrothed was releasing. So I started at 2022. I thought it was going to be easy to pound out. It was not. It was the hardest thing ever. There was a ton of mental game. I went back and forth. It took me like a year and a half to actually finish it. And finally, you know what got me actually to finish it? I don't necessarily wish this on me again, but that's okay. On Instagram, people were memeing me saying, so when you see authors doing other things, instead of writing, and then they put like a guy with his eyes wide open and then they tag me to it. And I'm just like, note taken. That was not the only meme I got. I got like three or four other people memeing me and stuff and all at the same time. So I was like, you know, I probably should finish it. So I decided this August, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a break from Instagram. I'm just going to solely focus on finishing this manuscript that is almost done, but not quite done. Yes. And so I ended up plotting it out, finishing it within 3 weeks. I like something that took me years to do. I did it in 3 weeks, finished it, went back, edited it, and I submitted it to my publisher because, first of all, because I had spent so long on it, the first half of it is like on its 20th draft. The second half of it's like on a second or first draft. So, yeah, I'm like, my publisher has to like it or not like it anyway. So I want to see if they like it. And if they do, then I'll go through. If it doesn't, then I will indie publish it because I feel like I left a lot of readers hanging.
Yes, please. Please,
Yeah.
please,
So, yeah.
please. Yeah, that's funny. That's really funny. Let's see. What are you reading right now? What's your current book?
Well, so this is one of them. I read more than one book at a time. Reason is
I do
because
the
I have
same
an
thing.
audiobook and then I have a physical book. The physical book is for nighttime. I don't like to have blue light in my eyes. It's actually really bad for sleep, everyone's sleep in general, but I personally have an issue because I also have Hashimoto's, so I really need my sleep. So I have a physical book that I'm reading. I also have an audiobook for when I'm cleaning dishes and folding laundry, and that one is Fable. Well, I forgot what the second one's called.
Oh yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. Are there any like recommendations, like as far as Facebook groups or Instagram accounts that feature closed door clean romances? Because I'm a huge, huge proponent of closed door clean romance. I can tell you, my most recent one, I was like holding my breath on whether it was going to stay clean because you never know with some of these books, like what's going to happen. And sometimes you can kind of tell by the tone of the book where it's going. You know, if it's mentioning certain body parts, if it's, you know, like certain things happen, I know to shut the book and just stop reading. But Enchanting the Elven Mage, that was one that was closed door, and I was super happy about that. So that's one of mine. But anyway, do you have any recommendations for Facebook groups or Instagram accounts?
Oh yeah, tons. So actually I tend to do interviews and stuff with people who do closed door or no spice, whatever. Even though the more I think about it, I don't like no spice. You know why? Because I like spicy food. I think spicy food tastes better than non-spicy food. But I feel like when you say no spice, you're like saying it doesn't have anything good in it. So I don't really like that term anymore. Just thinking about it, I'm like, I prefer clean. And I think that's okay. And I think a lot of people hate clean because, like, oh, it makes it sound dirty. I'm like, well, maybe it is dirty. And that's fine. If you like dirty, like you like that, then you like that. If
Right.
There's, but I don't like that. I like clean stuff. So I follow, what is her name? Brittany Wang. She has a no spice sort of directory thing. And she says, she gives it a rating for what type of spice is in it. So she is a great person to connect with. Right now, I'm actually part of this, what a challenge, a book challenge. And that one is called Bright Fantasy in a Dark World. And that is a Facebook group. Right now we're doing a challenge with people like Melanie Celier. I don't know if you've read her books, but her books are amazing. She has like 30 books out there. And we're all have a takeover each day. And it was amazing just to meet a whole bunch of new readers. And so that one's really great. Another person is, there's a girl who just came out. She does sweet romance, sweet clean romance, I think that's her account name. And she does all sorts of different books that have romance. So Unbetrothed was also included in it because it has romance in it. Let me see who else there is.
Is that Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram.
Yeah. I think I know that one.
Yes. And then there's a magazine called Clean Fiction, and you can submit to have your book reviewed through them. And that one's great. And that one's a physical magazine, but also they do post stuff on Instagram. So you will find their account on Instagram. I'm trying to think. There's other authors doing big things. It's really great to connect with them. I'm part of a Christian mommy group. We boost each other. And we're not necessarily like reviewers or anything like that, but they've been a huge support in my journey. And they're all women who do closed door, or like there was definitely a very big stopping point for them. Like you will never find anything that goes past that stopping point, even though, you know, it's funny because there's like this one little line, it's a little bit gray. So some people are a little bit more to the like nothing, and other people a little closer to it's okay, a little kissing, and here's the closed door line. But everyone writes closed door. So that's really great too.
And that's Facebook.
That one is Facebook. I don't know if they're open. I'll see if they're open to other people joining, because you're a mommy too, right? You're a mommy writer.
Yeah.
Okay. So I will.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
You have mommy to be invited. Writer? Like it's called Christian Mommy Writers, and you have to be invited to it. But they're amazing, and they're all very serious writers, and like they publish indie, and they publish like some people are bigger names, like Kimberly Woodhouse. She's in it too, so it's really nice. We have all people all over the place, and we teach each other, because some people are really great at one thing, other people are really great at other things, and some people are brand spanking new. So it's great, and there's a lot of editors in the group, so it's nice to get their pricing and see what they're doing and support each other. Let me think.
I would love to get an invitation if you wouldn't mind sending me one.
I'll ask if they're open right now, and if they are, for sure. There's also Redbud Writers, and I think they're open to invitation, but I think you have to pay to get in. And they're all, they all support each other, and they also do a blog together.
That's Facebook too.
Redbud is, I think they're their own little blog. So I found them, or someone recommended them to me on Instagram, and you'll find them on Instagram. And they have a website and blog. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Lore Haven. If you haven't connected with Lore Haven, you got to connect with them. Steve is doing a great job. He's out at Christian homeschool conferences. And he like, they have a team of people who review books, and they put it out there. Like Enclave is very, a big supporter of what Steve is doing in Lorehaven. So, I mean, you see people who are already reading Christian fantasy, who want more Christian fantasy. So they're a great place to connect to.
So Lorehaven, that's Instagram, Facebook, it's all of it.
They're all the above. They're all the above. Yeah. X, they're a blog, they're a magazine. So yes. And his name, Steve, I'll remember his name after we get off this call, of course. But Steve is great. Like, I really do appreciate him. I met him at Right to Publish, and he definitely has a heart for this.
So Lore Haven, L-O-R-E, Haven, H-A-V-E-N.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I will definitely look up all these. Really, really great. I think I've recognized a couple of them. Always looking for more. And I'm so excited that you were able to come with me and or talk to me today. Thank you so much for taking the time. And hopefully, hey, and by the way, I meant to tell you that if you ever need a beta reader or ARC reader, please reach out. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that means a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. How do you get your beta readers, by the way?
So right now I either have my mom do it because my mom is a critical beta reader. You know, like she, I don't know. A lot of people are like, don't have your mom read it. And then it's like, but you don't have my mom. My mom's going to tell me it looks bad. She's like, girl, I don't want you being embarrassed. That's terrible. So she tells me things like that. Oh yes, I'm really interested. Or like, oh, like I, poor mom, I've seen her read my stuff and she's bored and she's like falling asleep on it. I'm like, oh, I think that's a hint. What chapter are you on?
Okay.
Yeah. So she's my main one. I have a few other friends who are in the industry who sometimes read my work. Also, the Christian Mommies group. They are amazing. You can go, there's like a beta reader section where you could ask, hey, anyone want a beta read? And a lot of people beta read. Like they did one of my chapter books for me. And that one's still on submission. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay. And my last question, how do you find your, like, do you hire editors personally before you submit them? You do?
No. So for submitting to my publisher, I do not. I just read it myself several hundred times. Well, it feels like 100 times. And I submit it. For actual publishing stuff, I have an agent. My agent does read through my work. And then she gives me her feedback. Usually it's really good feedback. Another thing, let me think. I have an editor friend who sometimes reads my work and she's amazing. So I ask her, she's the one who made all the comments and stuff like that. She actually stepped down from editing because she's homeschooling now, but I do ask her to read my work and edit. And then I also have some editor friends who I will pay, but usually I only do that if I'm publishing. So what, for this process, I usually do there. I have a friend who she's really great with edits. She does children editing. So if you want any YA and down, that's her specialty. And I have her go through it and she does developmental edits. Now for line editing, I will have my friends do it. I have a lot of friends who are really like who've been my crit buddies before and they are excellent line editors. That's what they like. That is their gifting. So I have them do that, maybe a couple of them. And then for proofreading, I'll hire someone for proofreading or copy editing and stuff like that. Just so the cut on costs, because everything costs a lot of money.
I know. It's like you're looking at like $1,000 every time you want to try to hire somebody for an edit.
I do know someone who is amazing and she is not that much money. So her, and she has amazing books. So if you haven't read her books, do go read her books. Her name is Jennifer Hunt, Jennifer Q Hunt. Her editing is much more affordable. And read her books and you will see that she is good at what she does. She's a great author. So, and I've seen she's done other people in her groups and her editing is much more affordable.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you want like two opinions, you could also do that. You'll be able to afford that line editor. Because that's what I noticed. A lot of people get developmental editors because it's very expensive, but then they skip the line editing, but their lines are not, you know, it's just not there yet. But it's a way of being able to do both of them.
I actually just found an editor, the publisher for Quill and Flame I've become friends with. Actually interviewed her too. She does really great.
Jessica?
AJ. I call her AJ. Oh, yeah, Jessica
Gwen. April. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because there's like Jessica, and I did an interview with her. You think you saw it? I'm not sure.
I did. Yeah. I did see that interview. Yeah. So I have been really blessed to find her. She is, I mean, and she's willing to do the developmental and line edit. Like she'll offer both because she's like, I just can't. I think she said it on your podcast. You can't ignore.
Yes, which I appreciate, because I'm like, how do you like put blinders on with that? Like,
I know,
blinders, like that's impossible, I feel like, but.
yeah, I actually completely forgot she did a podcast with you. Yeah, I wanted to watch it because I was going to be talking to you, and then I also was interested in her as an editor, and that was one of the things that sealed the deal. I'm like, oh, I've got to have her. So, and she's going to be launching book two with me in February, so that's super
And she's
exciting.
great at those. Honestly, like I see all her work and I'm like, that's amazing. So if anyone wants someone to help you launch your books, because launching is a beast. If you, I'm sure with
Yes.
Tara, you noticed it is a beast. And
Yes.
it's like, it's really hard to do well.
It is hard to do well.
It
You
really is.
almost need that extra help. I'm actually doing a blog tour. It starts Friday with Celebrate Lit. Have you heard of Celebrate Lit
I
before?
have.
Yeah,
If
so
I had to do a launch again with on my own, especially for indie, I would definitely do Celebrate Lit.
I'm super excited. I am super excited. So
Another
we'll see how
person,
that
if
goes.
you want to ask, who did a really great job promoting her books and everything, is CF Black, CFE Black.
Yeah,
She is really
she
great
did
with her.
do a really good job. Yeah,
Yes.
she did do a
She's
really
super
good job.
talented. She's like, oh, I really, you think? I'm like, yes, I know. So I'm actually doing an interview later today that I think you would love to see, and I think your audience would just love to get to know. It's Glory Writers, the Glory Writers. I don't know if you've heard of Victoria Lynn, but Victoria Lynn, she is amazing at launching her books. She is very into Christian fiction, Christian fantasy, Christian sorts of things, and she's starting a group up, and she also is starting a press. So I kind of wanted to find out more about that, because it's like, okay, you know, a lot of Christians, like, we don't have a lot of places to send our material. Like, we're pretty limited. So I thought that was really cool that she's doing that, and she's excellent at what she does. So someone to look out for too, because it's like we're promoting each other. We're seeing what everyone does. And she also has like editors and stuff in her group. So that's someone else to get to know. I like finding people who are doing great things and just showcasing that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been amazing, and I hope any of my readers, any of my listeners can find out all about the writing world through you and read your books because it's amazing. I'm betrothed. Read it
I know.
today.
I'm like, I'll be reading this one. These are my nights now. You did a great job at catching me at the beginning. So, just saying.
Oh, good. And I'm so glad you got it because I was afraid that it got lost in the mail. So I'm glad you
That's
did
why I
get
thought it was in a different PO box. I'm like, oh no. You know how like they're all together. I'm like, oh no. And you know, people don't check their PO boxes that often.
I know. Yeah, they are. I have one myself, and I hardly ever check it. Okay. Well, Candace, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. And I will be. What time is your podcast on today?
Well, if the IG Live is going to be at 1 o'clock, so in
1
less than an
o'clock your
hour.
time, so 2 o'clock my time. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Candace, and have a wonderful day, and
You
get and be blessed in everything you're doing. It's wonderful.
Yes, thank you. You too.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Sophia Talk Show. Come back for more fun interviews and talks about all things fantasy and fiction. Go to sophiasimpson.com, Sophia with an F, if you'd like any links that I mentioned in the show. And find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for all things Sophia Simpson books. My handle is Sophia Simpson Author. See you there.